C1P. Number 2B.
How can we forgive ourselves or pardon ourselves scientifically? Well, naturally you can do that by seeing who you are. That we ask always ourselves, who am I? Who am I as an idea of God? And you begin to establish within your consciousness that you first work out that we are not the person, that we are not the mortal, that though we seem to have a personal name and seem to have a personal body that belongs to us and seem to carry around that body and seem to live in time and space, still the fact about our being is that we are idea and not a mortal. So I begin to forgive myself and begin to see that all that there is true about me is that I am an idea of mind. Therefore, all that there is true about me is that I live and move and have my being at the point of infinite activity, infinite creative ability, of infinite intelligence and lawful fullness, so that I feel as an idea of mind, I'm always at the point of infinite inspiration and infinite vision and infinite intelligence. And that's true about me. That's all that is true about me from the point of view of mind. And you can go on to the point of spirit and see, who am I at the point of spirit? At the point of spirit, I'm a spiritual entity. I'm not a material entity. I'm not a corporeal entity. I'm an absolutely spiritual entity, a spiritual factor in the whole of being, timeless, spaceless, a spiritual factor that is substantial, that is real, that is constantly bringing forth the fruits of spirit, that therefore can constantly bring forth the new birth in the universe, so that I feel that I am an infinite source of supply of new ideas, spiritual ideas, coming to birth, coming into existence, unfolding, evolving, and finding finally its true identity. So as an idea of soul, I begin to see, who am I? I am that what God knows about me. What does soul know about me? How does soul name me? And it says, you are not a mortal, you are not a sinner. You are always at the point of being the unchangeable identity of being. Nothing can ever touch you. Nothing can ever influence you. Nothing can ever deface your true identity. And I begin to feel, therefore, that I am at the point of unchanging, sinless identity with a name which says, Thou art mine. I am God. That's my name. Thou art mine. And so at the point of principle, I begin to see I'm not a person. I'm principle's own idea. Therefore, I'm always at the point of governing with spiritual power, always being a spiritual power to the whole universe, always being a spiritual influence, governing the universe with a system of principle. Therefore, always giving to the universe government, absolute government, the sense that it is a terrific, absolute impact on the universe. I'm a world factor. Reflecting the idea of principle, each one of us is a world factor, a world power, a world savior. And it saves through this absolute power of principle. And therefore, at the point of life, I like to see that I am living and being in the one life, without past, without present, without future, just at the point of beingness, that I am as old as Abraham. But before Abraham, I was, because life is always. So I feel that, therefore, all my being is a spontaneous manifestation of that being, always new, always fresh, irrepressible, irresistible, that the ideas flowing to me are a power in life, and therefore irrepressible, and they will always go out into the world as an irrepressible newness of life, inspiring and elevating and exalting every situation. That would be my true idea, my true identity as an idea of life. And as an idea of truth, I always see, who am I? How does truth know me? And truth says, I'm only conscious of my wholeness. Therefore, you are always at the point of health, of wholeness, always at the point of having dominion over everything. You are an idea that has dominion over your body, over your mission, over your life, over your future. You are an idea that it has dominion over your surrounding, over the weather, over everything that comes along. You are just God's own consciousness of Himself. I'm not that what I know about me. I'm not that what I am conscious about me. I'm 1,000,000,000 times more than that. Namely, I'm that what truth knows about me. And truth knows about me whatever goes on in the divine consciousness. Therefore, always that which will regulate and dominate the unconscious consciousness, the collective unconsciousness, the archetypal consciousness, the universal unconsciousness, I am the supra-consciousness of truth. And therefore I will be inspired by that truth to know everything that I have to do. So at the point of love, I can see that love knows me at the point of fulfillment, at the point of perfection. Nothing is missing. And therefore, more and more I have to see that at that point, the true I, my true I, as the I of love, is always fulfilling the plan of God, is always moving in the plan of God. Therefore, that every detail in the universe is serving me, is helping me, supporting me, welcoming me, accepting me as the idea of love. And therefore, I begin to find my pardon. I'm no more feeling I'm a stinker, I'm just a mortal, and I'm full of idiosyncrasies. I begin to free myself from all what the mortal tries to tell me. And the mortal tries to tell me quite a lot. So one has to find that pardon, just as the Magdalene wanted to find her pardon. She too was yearning to see that she is not a harlot, but that she is the blessed child. And she found it. She really was the one that could handle animal magnetism. That's why she was the very first one that could conceive of the risen Christ. She was the only one that really saw that idea right away. And so what Jesus here was, or what Mrs. Eddy here is telling us, is that the practitioner must first find his own pardon. And only then is he at the point of being a scientific idea which has spiritual power, and therefore can also resuscitate the patient. We can't resuscitate the patient if we have nothing within us resuscitate. Yes. So we come to the point of life, and she goes on and says, the true practitioner must first demonstrate the fullness of life for himself. Not only must he find the pardon, but even more than that, he must see that he is a full idea of life. She says that we first must cast moral evils out of ourselves in order to cast out physical evils out of the patient. So that we must not be overwhelmed. Can you hear always the tone of life? Not overwhelmed by a sense of the odiousness of sin and by the unveiling of sin in one's own thought. It's a wonderful sense to get that grace of life, where one sees that one can really overflood all those arguments that say that we are still immortal, and see that we have the fullness of life at our disposal, to see that we can flood, so to say, our whole life with the stream of life, with the floods of life, and therefore can never be overwhelmed by error. But if we have within us that sense that we are a source, a well of life, and that out of that well of life flows, there is only a flowing outward, not the flowing inward, then by that overwhelming sense that we can give out always the ideas of perfection, always giving out the idea of perfection, nothing can flow inward anymore. No sense of error can flow inward and overwhelm us and flood our thoughts with negative ideas, with fear, with doubts, with insecurity. So that at this point we really feel we are that well of life, flowing, 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 giving, 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 overflooding, overflooding, overflooding the whole universe with that love and mind, with that idea of perfection. Unconditionally giving, unconditionally projecting out to every situation the fullness of life. Just to take that attitude and say, does God at the point of life, does God at the point of life, giving out, being the Father, does that life know anything that is negative? It just doesn't. Everything is an infinite emanation from that one source, and therefore all depends on that infinite emanation of that one source. Therefore every situation is of the same nature as that one source, namely a fullness of life. So she says, therefore, if the practitioner doesn't have that full sense of life, he cannot help. He cannot help. And then she depicts the counterfeit of that. His own spiritual barrenness debars him from giving drink to the thirsty. See, if we have a barrenness within ourselves, we are not the well of life and cannot give drink to the thirsty. If we have a feeling that we cannot give out unconditionally, abundantly, then we have a barren sense of life. A sense of life that says it can, it is not inexhaustible, it can exhaust. Then he cannot reach his patient thought. Then mental penury, can you see mental penury, the counterfeit of life, chills his faith and understanding. So when he lacks sympathy, can you see lack, the counterfeit of life? If he lacks sympathy, if he lacks love, sympathy for his fellow being, if he is deficient, can you hear the counterfeit of life, the fullness of life, being deficient in human affection, deficient in love? When he lacks, again lack, counterfeit of life, when he lacks faith in the divine mind, when he lacks the recognition of infinite love, then he cannot heal. Do you see that being a practitioner is like being a well of life? You know, you must have within yourself that sense there is an inexhaustible source within you, and you just can give out unconditionally. Just being like God Almighty, he reigns on everyone. He gives rain to every farmer, without asking, have you been a good boy or not? Have you behaved yourself properly or not? It just, the gift of grace just comes down from heaven and floods the whole universe. And that's not up there. We are that source. Have we a mentality that just says, oh, I just give out, and I don't ask to whom I give it. I give unconditionally. Then we have a sense of abundance within ourselves. And only then can we also give abundance to the patient. Only like can give like. Only fullness can bring forth fullness. And if we have a mental penury, a mental lack, we cannot help. There is nothing to give away. Yes. So can you see, right up to now, all these qualities that the practitioner has to show forth are not qualities that have anything to do with just studying the science of being. They have to do with qualities of manhood, of true manhood. And therefore it is not just knowing somehow the system that heals. That's not enough. It's only the starting point. It's only the ladder let down from heaven that helps us to reach the point of perfection. What is necessary is that there is something within us, in our whole being, in our whole makeup, that reflects mind, seeing the true idea, that reflects spirit, being good and pure oneself, that reflects soul, being selfless oneself, having no ego sense of oneself. That reflects principle, that has treated oneself first and have found first one's own pardon and has found first that we are first idea and not the mortal. Before we can help the patient to see that he is not the mortal but an idea, we first have to see that we are the idea of principle, the whole system working as principle. That at the point of life, we first have to come to that point where we begin to see that we are the well of life. That I am feeling to be the well of life. That I don't have any more the feeling there must be somewhere a God up there who is flooding my being with grace. Here at that point, you know, we are at Christianity, at the point of idea. Here we have to have a sense, I am that well of life. I am the infinite, inexhaustible well of life. And if I want to reflect life, I must give forth constantly through my mentality, give forth the abundance of ideas to every situation. And only in this way we really reach that point of truth where we begin to reflect truth. The true practitioner here must first grow into Christian manhood. You see, he must grow into Christian manhood. She says, what makes a healer? Ye are the salt of the earth. Ye are the light of the world. See, she doesn't say, ye are a student who have studied for many hours each day. It says, ye are that one that embodies the truth, the light of the world, the salt of the earth. Do we feel that we are salty enough to really give some value to the universe? Do we have something within us that we feel that's really the truth that the universe needs? Therefore, she says that it is no use to hide the talent of spiritual healing under the napkin of its form, just to know the matrix. Not to bury the morale of Christian Science in the grave clothes of its letter, just to know the letter very well, so that we just can gush it out. Therefore, no hecatombs of gushing theories. Hecatombs, hundreds of, various gushing theories, stereotyped borrowed speeches. You know, stereotyped borrowed speeches. That one begins to hear the students having the same language as I have, using the same terminology and renderings that I use, thinking because Max has had it, that if I repeat it, I have the truth. These are just stereotyped, borrowed speeches. Are you the salt of it, of what I have been saying? That is the problem. Dulling of arguments, and with the arrogance of rank and display of scholarship. Do we do that because we want to show I'm a really good student, I'm a really good scholar, I really know all these tapes inside, outside, for display of scholarship, to show what a good student I am? It doesn't do a trick in healing. It's all right to start there. But are ye the light of the world? Are ye the salt of the earth? And that means that we need something more. So we must seek truth from the summit of devout consecration, with the oil of gladness and the perfume of gratitude. That's so beautiful. Do we study what we study really with that oil of gladness, with that happiness, with that inner happiness, with that inner joy, that is so happy to be chosen out of 4 billion people to have found the idea that saves the world? Are we grateful for being chosen, for being just some out of those 4 billion people living on this world? Do we feel that gratitude, that perfume of gratitude, of being the chosen people? By watching, working, and praying, by watching, working, praying, does the student pray, or does he only study? Does he only make notes, or does he pray? Does he sit really down in quietude, all alone? The student is alone with God and the reality of being, and does he struggle alone, struggle with his consciousness, struggle with his own mentality, struggle with his own false sense of being, until he finds that he is pardoned, until he finds that he gathers the manhood of Christ, and not a human manhood, that he feels touched by the Christ consciousness? Does he pray? By watching, working, and praying, that the salt does not lose its saltness, that the light be not hid, but that it radiates and glows in moontide glory. This is the Christ consciousness. Then at the point of love, we have that the true practitioner must live by anticipating spiritually the consummation of his vision. Very necessary. Can you see the motherhood sense in this? The motherhood sense that can see the end right from the beginning, that does not look at the beginning only as a beginning, but looks at the beginning already knowing the end, already living by the promise, by the spiritual promise. She says, the Christ cure has come to this age, how? Through a still, small voice and silent utterances. The Word. With divine anointing, the Christ, which quickens and increases the beneficial effects of Christianity. Therefore, her scientific sense of it, I long to see the consummation of my hope, namely, the student's higher attainment in this light of life, in this line of light. in this line. Which line? The line she has been showing through mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, to love. Is the student going along that word order? Is he going along that line of the word? Is he willing to be first a practitioner as the idea of mind, the idea of spirit, the idea of soul, the idea of principle, the idea of life, the idea of truth, the idea of love? That's the question. If so, then we can always see, so to say, the promise already fulfilled. Because we know as an idea, the idea will always fulfill itself. And so the practitioner must not only look at the beginning, he must look at the whole word order and see that if we touch an idea rightly, that carries within itself the whole word order, the whole creative order of fulfillment. And that is what he shows here in that first part. Isn't it beautiful? Isn't it also impressive to feel that to become a practitioner, be a practitioner, is as if she would say, be first a Christ man. Before you try to help the others, you have first to work on yourself as much as you can. Therefore, my advice is the same that John Dolly gave us in the class. He always said, go and work on yourself. You are your first patient, and you are the constant patient. That patient you will never lose. Yes. All right. So, we go on this afternoon.